be real. Let's 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 be real. Mopping. Let's be real. Mopping. Let's be real. Let's be real. Mopping. 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 Let's be real. 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 Mop, real, mop, mop, real, 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 real,
Hi, I'm Ronald Weaver from Santa Monica. You're listening to WGXC
Acra.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how do I's into here's how you can's. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kyle of Athens, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxe.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm trying to get the people to say frequency.
You are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. This program is Bequency, and my name is Mayuko. Bequency is a radio program all about birds and bird people here in the Hudson Valley. And every episode of Bequency features an interview with bird enthusiasts in Columbia and Greene counties and surrounding areas for us to be inspired by the joy and beauty and wisdom that they find in the bird and nature. And plus, we listen to a freeform mix of sounds made by birds and humans inspired by birds. For today's episode, I interviewed Peter Schoenberger from Woodstock, Ulster County. Peter is an experienced birder and a bird photographer. You know, we don't know in which stage of life we get the call. Peter started birding at the age 43, and his journey with the birds reminds us that life takes a mysterious path, and it inspires us to let the call guide our way. This interview took place in the Great Vlai, a 184-acre wetland located in Sergetis on the border of Ulster and Green counties. It was truly an inspiring conversation, so stay tuned for that. It's coming up in a bit. We're gonna start today's show with a folk song that is originally from the 70s, and it's titled Not I, the Seed. And we're gonna hear a cover version by PG6, who is a local artist from Columbia County. The song was composed by Jeffrey Kane. And I just wanted to start today's show with this song because of the conversation that I had with Peter. Really kind of reminded me of this song about birds. So I thought it would be nice to listen to this beautiful song. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you stick around. This is Frequency on WGXC. I'll see you in a bit.
Said you can make it if you try. You stood up and said, oh no, not I. I come from a family where we stay on the tree, and when we're ripe, we're eaten by the bird. By the bird. When the bird has eaten all I am, I will give him strength to fly away, and he will carry me into the sky, and far away together we shall fly over mountains, hills, and fruity plains. The summer sun and winter rains, I shall be the feathers on his wings, and I shall be the morning song he sings. And through the palace garden to his lair, I will be the light directing him. And I will give him all the help he'll need to bear upon the king compassion seed. The seed. And when I am a lark song on the air, unto the king the love of life I'll bear, that in his heart might give birth, and peace may reign once more upon the earth.
You're listening to Beat Wency on WGXC. We just heard a song titled Not I, The Seed, performed by local artist PG6. He has an upcoming show at the Tubbies in Kingston this coming Wednesday, so if you're in the area, why not check it out? And now we're going to hear my interview with Peter Schoenberger. Again, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Could you briefly introduce yourself?
Okay. I'm Peter Schoenberger. I'm from Woodstock, New York. I'm a birder and a bird photographer. And I've been at this for close to 20 years now. It's my heart's passion. And yeah.
Okay, could you tell us about this place, this great Vlaai, you said?
Yeah, Vlaai, the great Vlaai. It's a Dutch word for for swamp. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of bodies of water around here called Vlaai, but this is the great Vlaai, and it is 5 acres that surrounds this body of water that's about a mile and a half long. And it is actually, I'm told it's a bog, technically, because of the floating mats of mud. A bog. It's a word, a specific word for a certain kind of swamp. Oh. And I think because of the floating mats of vegetation and mud, that it falls into that definition. It's a wonderful place that I've always been attracted to places that humans have desecrated. Like this place, is used as pretty much like a dump. Mm-hmm. And industry. There was mushroom processing that happened right on this land that we're standing, and it's been a dumping ground for people. But the wildlife doesn't care, and they've come and made it their own, and we have a great variety of birds and bobcats and bears and otters and you name it. It's
you see otter here?
Oh yeah. So since the first time I ever walked here, I've always been drawn to it.
That's great. So I read a little bit about you, assuming that there's no other Peter Schoenberger in Woodstock.
I don't think so.
And one of the articles said that I found it very interesting when I learned that you hadn't been a birder until the age of 43. Mm-hmm. And as we get older, we could become, you know, a little reluctant to put ourselves in the position of a beginner. And I always find it inspiring to hear about people who start something new as an adult or at an older age. And so that's kind of, for me, I struggle a lot with mental health and stuff in my 20s. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So a lot of the thing I had to start as an older person. So I learned English in my 30s, and you know, I'm doing radio, but it's only like the last like 7 years or so. So I always have to put myself in the place, even as an immigrant too. Like you're the one who doesn't know anything, and they can be intimidating. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's experience it the same way, but I just find it sometimes challenging, although it could be exciting, to walk into a completely new thing as an older person. So I was very interested in your experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can only put it this way, and I think people who find birding whenever they find it, I had no choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm.
My situation was, I grew up in the woods.
Okay.
I grew up with binoculars around my neck, but I was not looking at bird. I was looking at I was a hunter too. I used to hunt when I was young. And I was looking for amphibians and white-tailed deer and whatnot, but just did not see birds. And as I go back over my life, I see a million times where I saw neat birds, and it could have pulled me into that, but it wasn't. Well, actually, the story is a little more interesting in that when I was 37, my one and only son was born.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was 2, he was diagnosed with a very rare cancer. And after several years of trying to deal with that, he died.
Oh.
And when he died, it became very clear to me that I needed to take care of myself and just slow down, no demands on myself. And I continued like that for several years, and I was still hurting because losing my son. And I finally decided to book a trip up in Vancouver Island in Canada, where they take you out and you kayak with orca whales.
Uh-huh.
And since I was doing that and spending all that money, I decided I'm going to buy some really nice binoculars. So I did. I ordered a pair of these Swarovski binoculars I'd seen at a sporting goods store. And when they came, I sat down on my deck and I'm looking up in the trees and I see this little black and white bird with this tang orange throat, just really bright. I looked it up. It's a Blackburnian warbler. It just blew my mind that this little bird was right there in my property. Mm-hmm. And it just got me thinking, my goodness, what else is there? And that was the moment. It just happened. And from that day, I mean, prior to that, every hobby I've ever had in my life, I suffered in my 20s. I was hurting and without direction. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I got older. Mm-hmm. And my hobbies would last a year and then I'd get bored and I'd move on to something else. But that moment that happened with that Blackburnian warbler changed everything. I suddenly had a passion. I needed to know who the birds were. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like just an interest. I was compelled to find out who they are, where they are, when they are. And so I just began it. I never stopped. Just never, ever since then, I've been at it all day. Even when I'm working, I'm still looking around. it's what I do. And I don't know what it is. I'm very fascinated by what that is. What it is that changes one thing one day, I could care less about birds. The next day, I needed to do it. I don't know. And I often ask other birders, what is it for them? Because it doesn't seem like it's the same thing it is for me.
Yeah.
But it's having that passion after having 43 years of not necessarily having a passion in life was a real gift. It's a reason I wake up in the morning. It really... I'm just grateful to have received it.
Like going out and watch birds being sort of like part of almost like a recovery, it just expands your life and world.
Well, the natural world has always been like religion to me. I'm not really much for organized religion. The natural world to me is always a place I went as a child for solace, for comfort, and the quiet of it. And it's always been a special place for me. But what the birds did is they took the natural world, and because birds move around and they're so habitat specific, it really defined where you are. If you're at the Vlei, you're going to see this bird, that bird, and that bird. Mm-hmm. If you go over to the Hudson River, you're going to see another set of birds. So they inform that nature that I love so much. They really place you. If you're seeing green-winged teal, you know you're in a certain habitat, you know? And something about that magical thing that can fly and can migrate 9,000 miles, shorebirds, like shorebirds do, it makes my mind swim with imagination.
I wonder if it kind of pulls us out of our little headspace.
That it does.
Put in the much bigger world and just makes you realize that, you know, especially when you're suffering, you can't feel much other things when there's so much pain or when there's so much burden or stress. I think a lot of people experience that they don't have the capacity to think of, like, stop and look at a little beautiful thing because you're so full of, like, you know, whatever's going on in mm-hmm. your life.
Yeah.
But once you somehow being taken out of that little headspace and you suddenly see all this huge world is out there and doing their own business, then you kind of just go in and learn it. So that's really interesting. You said you grew up in the woods. Are you from New York State?
No, I grew up outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in a little town called Bernathen, which is a funny little place because it is surrounded by dense human population. Mm-hmm. But it's a throwback. It has the little Pennypack Creek that runs through it and a lot of wooded areas and still has farmland around it. But it's a tiny little place. So I grew up in that creek in the woods, down outside of Philadelphia.
So that's really interesting. So you grew up in nature. You know, for me, it's like I grew up in the suburb of Tokyo.
Okay.
So it's like a really city-ish. It's like a New Jersey of Tokyo, basically, is where I'm from. And so I didn't have much of any like nature, the living experience in nature as a child. And then, you know, I just spent my adulthood in Tokyo and then I moved to New York City. So really the only time, this is the first time I've really like been surrounded by trees and everything.
Wow.
And so for me, I'm not even there to have the sense of difference between being my mind blown by the caddisfly larvae, pronounce it,
yeah.
Or by the birds. Like everything just blows my mind.
Yeah.
So yeah. I just find it interesting that you were familiar with nature, but then there's something about birds particularly
Some reason got me. Yeah Well, I and I'm happy for you that you are able, because I find a lot of people who grow up in cities, they end up being afraid of nature. Nature is scary. Woods are where the bad guy is.
Mm-hmm.
The bear is always going to attack you,
right?
In their mind, you know.
Right.
And the truth is, well, my experience of the woods is that it's the safest place you can be. It just, there's nothing that hurts you in the woods. It's a peaceful place. And
they're afraid of you.
Exactly. And animals are just doing their thing. And they're not out to get you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
that's great that you enjoy it.
Yeah. I'm so happy since I moved upstate.
Yeah.
But so once you started birding, did you join a bird club? How did you go
about it? It didn't happen immediately. Now, this is, this happened to me in 2004. So we were still, you could be online, but the world wasn't online yet. And so, the way birders told each other about things were phone trees. They would call. If
uh-huh.
someone saw a rare bird, you would actually call up and find out. So I did. I poked around to look at different bird clubs, one up in Greene County, which didn't tend to do much. But I did join our John Burroughs
mm-hmm.
Society, History Society, Natural History Society. And once I did my first Christmas bird count, that was what really nailed me down. That was, to me, blew my mind doing my first bird count like that. I just knew I was going to be doing this for the rest of my life. But, you know, I was amazed. I went out with those people and they knew everything and they could magically call in owls. And mm-hmm. it was, and they were just showing me birds, a horned lark. I had no idea. It was very cool.
I have the same. I went to the Christmas bird count in Central Park, and that uh-huh. really got me too.
Yeah, I've always wanted to see that. That's quite a count,
uh-huh.
that particular one.
Yeah, it's a big groups too. Like
yeah.
they separate into several groups and cover yeah. Central Park, which is such a small area compared to what we
right?
do here.
Yeah.
And so that's great. So you learn basically from other birders.
Yeah.
Start with.
Oh, absolutely. The mm-hmm. first bit, it was mostly on my own with a field guide, a Sibley's guide,
mm-hmm.
and just working it out. I mean, I had a bird that called in my yard. I couldn't find it. And
mm-hmm.
it would do shree, 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 shree. It would make the sound over and over. But it was invisible. I couldn't find it. But I kept on hearing that song, and I hunted for it. Eventually, I found it. Found out in the book, It was a Louisiana water thrush. Oh. And they breed, right? I have a little stream that goes through my property. So they breed along slow-moving water. And so, you know, learning that way, slow and hard and hard-fought to find out who was doing that singing, it would be something I would never forget because someone didn't say, oh, there's a Louisiana water thrush. I had to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Which was great. But it was also nice when people would just say, oh, no, that's a this or that, too.
I tried to figure things out by myself, too, and I kind of wish I participated more walks so I get to hear other people mm-hmm. talk about mm-hmm. it.
Oh, very
seems
helpful.
To register my brain better. And I had the Merlin app, so I think it was...
Right.
I was starting at the
which
time.
Is dangerous because Merlin yeah. can give a lot of bad information.
But you can totally outsource your brain so you never remember anything, right. it seems.
Right. Well, as people ask me when they're talking about learning by burning by ear, by sound, is the first question they say, well, should I get recordings, you know, an app with recordings? And I say, yeah, it's great. It's wonderful to confirm something with, but it doesn't help you. Most people learn. Mm-hmm. What seems to help people learn bird song is finding and identifying the bird with your eyes and hearing it, that triangulation that helps you put it all together. That what seems to what cements it in your brain.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, Merlin's a wonderful tool, but it's got its limitations.
Right. Okay. What is your favorite local bird? If are we seeing?
Yeah, just more geese.
Okay.
My favorite local bird.
Yeah,
this
what?
Is a question of every time I've ever been interviewed about birding. It must be human nature to want to know what someone's favorite bird is. I do not have a favorite bird, but that being said,
uh-huh.
my favorite family of birds is probably sparrows, which
oh.
is not what most people. seem to be interested in.
I always found it the most hardcore.
They're hard. They're difficult. Yeah, because yeah. they're all brown and stripy.
Okay.
And I've always liked the birds that are rarer. I noticed that's an attractant to me. And in the family of sparrows, the family of Ammodromus sparrows, like Henslow's sparrow and LeConte sparrow, those are my favorite of the sparrow family, and I love shorebirds particularly, but I think if I had to choose one bird that really gets to me, it's the northern saw-whet owl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little tiny owl, it's a migratory owl, and we don't know a whole lot about saw-whet owls, and I find that fascinating, and I never even thought to look for saw-whet owls around here till one night I heard one in my yard in January, tooting. And that got me into looking, and I've spent a lot of time. They overwinter. They're here, and they breed up in boreal areas. But they're more abundant here than people have ever thought. And the more I look into it, the more I find. Some years, like this year, we don't seem to have any this winter.
Hmm.
But some years, they're all over the place. But they're very cute, and they're mysterious. And I love saw-whet owls.
So you said they would be here in the wintertime?
Sometimes, some winters. We really don't fully understand how and when and where they migrate. I mean, we do know when.
Mm-hmm.
They migrate through here right about Halloween, right at the end of October into November.
Mm-hmm.
And they overwinter part south of here and around here. But it's hit and miss where they are. Like I say, last winter, mm-hmm. they were all over the place. This winter, I can't find one. I haven't seen... the last time I heard one was in December.
Uh-huh.
And I go out frequently trying to find them. So I'm always trying to learn them by going out at night in various places and calling them. But you'd find them in pine woods.
Pine woods.
Yeah. And low, wet areas. Not big bodies of water, but, you know, just like little swampy areas with a little bit of water in it. Mm. Yeah, tough one to find. I've only ever found one just stumbling upon it in the woods.
That sounds pretty hard for beginners to find it.
Oh, yeah, it's hard for anybody. Anybody to find a saw-whet owl. It's a pretty big prize to find a saw-whet owl. They don't want to be found. They just tuck themselves away. Uh-huh. I don't know if you ever heard that story about the one that was in the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Well, they transported that whole tree with that saw-whet owl in there. He was a saw-whet. That was a saw-whet owl. They called him Rocky.
Uh-huh. Right, because it went to Rockefeller.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
But what about the, so maybe the sparrows might be, so I'm trying to get the tips to find.
Sparrows?
The birds. So I'm thinking, well, there are a bunch of different kinds of sparrows, and it's easy for us to dismiss when we see sparrow-like thing. We just assume, oh, it's a house sparrow, or it's a song sparrow.
Right.
But there are, I guess there's somewhat more rare.
Oh, there's lots of species of sparrow. Yeah. Right here, for example, you have swamp sparrows. In spring, you'll get migrating Lincoln sparrows.
Right.
What other sparrows? I've even had Savannah sparrows, which is not a sparrow that you'd expect here, but right where we're standing here, I've had Savannah sparrows. They're birds of the open areas, and most sparrows are, you know, from weedy areas to open field areas.
Mm-hmm.
Farmland is a wonderful place for sparrows.
Uh-huh. Farmland. And
weedy edges, you know, any place where a field meets an edge where you get a little bit of growth on the edge, sparrows are good in there.
Well, thank you very much for the interview.
Oh, well, thank you for interviewing me. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you. Great.
Day one storm, and it was beautiful. A day one storm from the ground. Then the night she fell, and the air was beautiful. The night she fell. Look, see the days, the endless colored ways. Go play the game that you learned from morning. And now we rise. We are everywhere. And now we rise from the ground. See, she flies. She is everywhere. See, she flies all around. Look, see the sights, the endless summer nights. Go play the game that you learned from the morning.
You're listening to WGXC Acre at 90.7 FM. This program is Frequency, a radio show all about birds and local bird people here in the Hudson Valley. That was a song titled From the Morning by Nick Drake from his album Pink Moon. released in 1972. I hope you enjoyed the interview, my interview with Peter Schoenberg. I know my friend Danny D texted me and to tell me that this is a wonderful interview. It's about birding, but it's very universal. I agree with you, Danny, and thanks for listening. I've been thinking a lot about what Peter said in this interview after we spoke. Like, stuff he said about how birds define where you are. And, I've been reading D.T. Suzuki's book about the Zen practice of no mind. As probably many people around here, the WGXC listeners know, D.T. Suzuki was the guy who John Cage studied Zen with. And I'm not going to pretend I understand his writing or anything like that, but there is a part that in this book that I'm reading where he talks about flying. And it sounds to me like when we come to the point where we suffer the most from, you know, all the attachment and dichotomies of this world, that's also the point where we can actually make the leap or fly, like transcend into the place where there are no boundaries between you and me, nor between heaven and hell, nor between anything. And there you find a completely different sense of existing. And he describes this transition as an act of flying. Like he calls it flying. And again, I'm not going to pretend I really understand any of this. And I'm kind of rather reading this book as if it's a poetry about the universe or something. But still, after I spoke with Peter, I thought about this thing about flying from this D.T. Suzuki's book. Because Peter emphasized about the birds flying and how magical it feels. And that's sort of what reminded me of the song that we heard at the beginning of today's show, the song Not I, the Seed, because I felt like we could think of the seed to be our heart or suffering, though that seed in that song can symbolize many different things. Like it could be our life to be something that nourishes others rather than ourselves. But, you know, I thought it could be heard as a seed can be our hearts, and we think at the time we think we can't make it even if we try, that's when the bird comes and swallows our hearts and takes it away, and that they together become the directing light for us. So it's really this magical feeling about flying that is truly something special. And I thought about this after I spoke with Peter, and so I hope you enjoy the interview. And I would like to tell you about some of the walks led by Peter Schoenberg. He leads bird walks hosted by local organizations as well as private walks. And there's an upcoming one on the April 29th, 2023. It starts at 7 a.m. and it runs through 12 p.m. This is at Kenneth Wilson State Park in Ulster County. Again, led by Peter, hosted by John Burroughs Natural History Society. You can find more information on this walk and for future walks led by Peter at John Burroughs Natural History Society's website, which is www.jbnhs.org. I guess it's all the initials of John Burroughs Natural History Society, jbnhs.org. And then there is this pretty interesting stuff, the Solar Boat Tours, Bird Watching and Photography Cruise with Peter Schoenberger, hosted by the Hudson River Maritime Museum in Kingston. It's happening throughout the summer on the first Sundays from June to October 2023. It starts at 8 a.m. and you can find the information and buy the tickets at www.hrmm.org. hrmm.org. Again, these are pretty easy ones. Hudson River Maritime Museum, hrmm.org. Not sure, they might keep adding more tours on the calendar. This is what I was able to find so far. So check back again on the website and book the tour. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. And I'm going to play a little field recording I made at the Vly when I hang out with Peter. You know, that could give you a little bit of the feel of what the walk with him can be like. So I'm going to do that. And going to listen to some more music. You're listening to Bequency on WGXC. WGXC, Waveforms, WGXC, the radio for open ears. And we are we are the 100% solar-powered radio station. Speaking of solar power. So, anyhow, thanks for listening. Let's listen to a little field recording I made with Peter. Stay tuned.
Have you ever seen a redhead?
Redhead, it's a kind of duck.
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen duck.
Okay, well, I want to show you one because they're pretty special birds, and there's like five of them out here.
Uh-huh.
And
five of them out here right now.
Yeah. Oh. It's just a matter of where they're hiding right at the moment. Well, no, it's just called a redhead.
Right.
Yeah. People frequently will call it a redhead duck, but it's just redhead. It's a redhead.
Funny, redheaded woodpecker.
Yes, that's why you're tempted to say that.
Is redhead entirely redhead?
Yep, it's a completely red. His whole head is completely a. It is a red. It's more of a. I don't know if you call it a. What would you call it? Rusty color. Redheads are diving ducks, so you got to make sure that they're not under the water when you go scanning by. Ah, here they are. Come look through here. There's a male and a female. I hope they're not going to disappear. They're behind the weeds, but you can look in there. That red-headed duck.
Oh, yeah.
That's
oh,
him.
It really is red.
Yeah, he's red-headed.
The point of a year or a season. Your life flies away as the night turns to day. If you stop once to think, your hair's turned gray. But one would like to wonder. What's the point of a year or a season? The list of false starts and crumpled broken hearts comes from the need to play so many parts. One would like to wonder the reason. What's the point of a year or a season? The wind and the rain shook hands again, untouched by the world they had managed to stay. They were able to wonder the reason. What's the point of a year or a season? Bird flew by and wondered why. wise enough to stay up in the sky. From there she could wonder the reason. What's the point? For a season.
We heard Bird Flew By, another song by Nick Drake from an album titled Family Tree, a compilation of his home and demo recordings. And now it's time for the Birds of Wave Farm, March edition. This is my attempt at a monthly field recording journal from Wave Farm, Akron, New York, which is where I am right now, broadcasting this radio show. Very snowy today. And right after this Birds of Wave Farm, we will listen to some more professional field recordings incorporated into Sarah Peebles' music. That track we're going to hear is from her 2022 release titled In the Canopy, Meditations from Paparoa and Kapiti Islands, created in New Zealand. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening. It's March 1st, 2023 at Wave Farm, Akron, New York. The temperature is 28, but it feels much warmer than that. I see chickadees, and there have been cardinals and Carolina wren. And as soon as I arrived here, I saw a pileated woodpecker and some kind of hawk, but I couldn't catch a good view of it. And there's been American crows. So that was a recording by Sarah Peebles. And it was a track from In the Canopy. And that's it for my show today. I guess I'm coming to the end of my time slot. This program has been Bequency, the show all about birds and local bird people here in the Hudson Valley. I will be back on the radio with Bequency next for Saturday, which is April 22nd, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm always here with the Bequency on 4th Saturday of the month. So I hope you'll join me again. You're listening to Waveforms WGXC Radio. Coming up next is The Countdown, produced by Tom Rowe. So I hope you stick around. And I see that I still have like 5 minutes left. So why don't we listen to one last song by... We're going to hear another song by Nick Drake. Going to play Saturday Sun, because it's Saturday, though it's not sunny here in Acre, New York. But maybe it is in the place where you are. So we're going to hear that. But I'm not going to come back. So again, thanks for listening. And I hope you come back to enjoy this bird-inspired stories and music with me. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.
Saturday sun came early one morning, and the sky so clear and blue. But Saturday sun came without warning. No one knew what to do. Saturday sun brought people and faces, but didn't seem much in their day. When I remember those people and places, they were really too good in their way, in their way, in their way. But Saturday about stories.